Demons running around in my head, and they feed on insecurities I have. Won't you lay
chapter six
healing hands on my chest, let your ritual clean, soak the ropes with your holy water.
Midge deems Obi-Wan healed enough to venture beyond the compound walls the next day, and Jango and Miles take him to the market. It's a small affair, but Obi-Wan sees signs of expansion and growth everywhere he looks. Jango apparently made it clear that this market is under his protection, this whole section of Keldabe, in fact, and people have been tentatively coming out of the woodwork to display their wares and chit-chat with neighbors. It's a long way from completely revitalized, but it's not an insignificant milestone for a recovering community to have achieved. Obi-Wan watches civilians smile and relax when they see Jango and Miles, and he feels the door he's attempted to lock his heart behind crack open just a bit further. It's futile, really, to continue trying to hold distance between himself and his soulmates. They're his soulmates. They appeal to him on every level, and they're executing a campaign to win him over that they seem to have crafted with every bit of attention they devote to a full incursion against Death Watch. They let him spend time with Cal and the other foundlings this morning, and the caretakers had clearly been coached not to show annoyance at Obi-Wan's many, many questions regarding how the children were cared for. He was permitted to observe the reunion of Takeen and her siblings with their parents, which somehow turned into an adoption of Lilik as well. He's been allowed to discuss strategy with Satine, and tended to by healer Midge, eminently competent, if with a somewhat gruff bedside manner, and given access to more food than he could ever consume. And through it all, Jango and Miles have never been far. They're trying to avoid smothering him, Obi-Wan can tell, but one or both of them has been in shouting distance ever since their confrontation at the compound wall yesterday. They answer anything Obi-Wan asks, and they haven't lied to him once. Obi-Wan is not an idiot, and he's not in love. Not with them, and, although it's hard to admit, not with Satine any longer either. He hasn't been in love with Satine for a while, if he's being brutally honest with himself, but clung to the idea of being in love. He'd been willing to break his oath as Jedi for her, and had very much been shying away from having to square that with falling out of love with her so quickly. There are a great many words Obi-Wan would use to describe himself. It is humbling to have had to add fickle to that list, but now that he is aware of this failing, he can strive to be better. He has resolved, then, to be exceptionally cautious in how he proceeds with Miles and Jango. If he is to give them any part of himself, mind, heart, or body, he must be unshakably certain in his loyalty. They are already so much more than he could ever deserve or hope to equal, and he will not bring them further shame by being changeable with his affections. Not that Jango and Miles seem to think there's shame in having Obi-Wan for a soulmate, which is perhaps the oddest thing about the past few days. They're certainly not hiding him, as this trip to the open-air market demonstrates. It's delicious, truly, but I'm still quite full from mid-meal, Obi-Wan says, when Jango tries to push yet another spoonful of Tingalar on him. Ignore him. Miles hooks a finger into Jango's collar and pulls him out of Obi-Wan's space, neatly snatching the bit from the spoon with his lips in passing. Ever since our stint as slaves, evidence of food insecurity really activates Jango's mother Nexu instincts. That's another thing Miles and Jango keep doing, offering up bits of their history that expose exploitable vulnerabilities. So far, Obi-Wan's learned that Jango's birth parents and sister were killed in a massacre on Concord Dawn, that Miles never knew his birth parents, that the two met while preparing for their respective Vergohen as young adults, nearly died together at Galadron, and, now, were slaves together at some point. All of these factoids that, if Obi-Wan were so inclined, he could press on, that he could make hurt. The way they're sharing this information with him so casually is heady. It could be a ploy. They could be lulling him into a false sense of security, waiting to see if he makes use of what he's been told, and then condemn him for it. But Obi-Wan's been checking in with the Force regularly, and when he goes to do it again right now... Jango attempts to get Miles in a headlock after the Mother Nexu comment, so it takes him a few seconds to realize that Obi-Wan isn't walking with them anymore. He shoves Jango off and jogs backwards a few steps to where Obi-Wan stopped in the middle of the street, looking at rooftops. Everything all right? We're about to be attacked, Obi-Wan says calmly. From the south, they're coming in high. 7, 8 combatants? Death Watch, I believe, although not the same group as from the camp. Miles's brain kicks over into battle mode without a second's hesitation, his subconscious already trusting Obi-Wan's word implicitly. He shouts a warning to the market-goers, who immediately start evacuating with minimal hysterics, a learned behavior that Miles is thankful for, but really hopes they can all get past one day. Jango slaps his helmet on and starts issuing orders, calling fight-ready Mandalorians to their position.
I don't suppose there's a point in asking you to hide?
Miles asks Obi-Wan, offering him a dagger.
You know, since you were almost dead for most of the last week.
If I stopped fighting every time I'd been almost dead recently, I'd be fully dead by now, Obi-Wan says, accepting the knife and neatly tucking it into his belt, before strolling over to a nearby vendor stall and plucking up one of the displayed staves. He spins it twice, once a simple rotation of his wrist, and once a more complicated movement that ends with him passing the staff hand to hand behind his back. He nods, satisfied with the waiting.
That's not reassuring,
Jango says.
And that's not going to hold up against a Beskad. Here.
Unceremoniously, Jango unstraps his left fanbrace and holds it out. Obi-Wan boggles at it, and Miles can't blame him. Miles is doing some boggling of his own. Armor carries weight in the Mandalorian culture, and vanbraces carry more weight than just about any piece of armor beside the helmet. Armor is part of the Reslan Array, and exchanging vanbraces, that's part of a redur ceremony. The Mandalorian loose equivalent of the Republic's marriage. The vanbrace Jango's offering is the only one of his own Jango has left, in fact, because the one on Jango's other forearm was Miles's originally. Of course, that's not what Jango means. Not now, not here, and Obi-Wan doesn't have vanbraces of his own to trade. Jango's just being practical. But there's no way Miles is going to let himself be outdone in this. So he strips off his right vanbrace, steps in close to Obi-Wan, and secures the piece in place. Obi-Wan lets him. He stays docile under Miles' hands, allows Miles to check the fit, continues holding still when Miles snatches Jango's vanbrace and straps that onto Obi-Wan's other arm. Obi-Wan swallows audibly, eyes fixed on the play of Miles' fingers.
I want you to know that I understand what this could signify, under different circumstances. And I promise not to read into...
When you're ready, when you've made your decision, if you want it, we'll take you to an armorer.
Miles interrupts, glad to have something to focus on besides all the pictures that just lit up in his brain at seeing Obi-Wan wearing even these couple pieces of their armor.
We'll get you a full set of Beskar, paint it so it tells the story of everything you've achieved and everything you stand for. And then, when you're ready, when you've made your decision... If you want it, we'll stand in front of our people, and we'll swear to each other. We are one when we are together. We are one when we are apart.
Jango intones as he takes up position with his back to them, protecting them.
We will share all. We will raise warriors. Dramatic son of a car,
Miles mutters fondly. The first wave of sound that precedes a battle reaches them, crashes and a few shouts, high and from the south. Just as Obi-Wan predicted.
Useful, the Force. He tugs once more on the straps of Obi-Wan's borrowed van braces, then pivots to face the oncoming enemy and unsheathes his sword.
Count us down, Obi-Wan.
6, Obi-Wan says, balancing his weight on the balls of his feet. 5, 4, 3. Kenobi fits beside them in battle in a way Jango knows he'll be dreaming about tonight and many, many nights to come. Jango's gotten glimpses of the Jedi's fighting style before, of course, but those were always skewed somehow. When Kenobi was pretending to be new Mandalorian, or true Mandalorian, or when he was working around a collapsed lung and multiple broken bones, and enough head trauma that Midge had to stare into space about it for a while. And even those skewed glimpses were enough to stir a type of hunger deep in Jango's belly. So this? Seeing Kenobi fight as himself, wearing their van braces, slotting under Miles's arms to take a Death Watch commando out at the knees, and pivoting to haul another commando over Jango's shoulder by the helmet in the next breath. Knowing that the man isn't even back to 100% yet, physically, and can still do this? Jango's too disciplined to get distracted in a fight to the point where it's negligent, but, like, wow. He finds himself idly wishing, as he lets Kenobi use him as a springboard to leap over one commando's head to strike at another's unprotected kidneys, that the guy had his lightsaber, because he bets it's a thing of beauty to watch him work with it. It's over too soon. Jango blasts the last of them out of the sky when they try to flee. Cowards. And then post-battle silence falls. Jango steadies his breathing, turns to check that Kenobi and Miles are uninjured, tries to relax enough for cleanup and coaxing civilians out of hiding. Kenobi's still on high alert, and it rips those first tentative threads of calm out of Jango's grasp. Their Jedi is still in a fighting stance, now with a blaster he'd harvested from one of the down Kirt Zod, trained down a side street.
Kenobi?
Small craft incoming, Kenobi says. I can't tell. It's shielded somehow, but... The small craft in question, a spaceship that looks like a snazzy four-person interceptor at first glance, bursts into the market, scattering stalls and goods and dust everywhere. Jango's reinforcements arrive on the scene at the same instant from the other direction, and Jango barks an order to hold fire. Last he checked, Death Watch doesn't have ships like that. But the interceptor's hatch pops open, and one of his people spooks. 3 shots rip across the market, slicing through the swirling dust, and are batted out of the air by the glowing green blade of a lightsaber. Jedi. And not their Jedi. A cold sort of ruthlessness settles over Jango. Kenobi may be an exception, and maybe Jango's wrong about more of the Jedi, too, but these are still the beings that slaughtered his father and people at Galadron. Still, the beings that allowed his soulmate to be next to him, Kenobi lets out a sound somewhere between a groan and a gasp. Oh no. Oh no. Oh no. Quinlan Vos, what did you do? The dust starts to settle. A figure jumps forward, and Jango almost gives the order to fire. But Kenobi didn't sound distressed. He sounded... The figure, lit by their lightsaber, resolves into a lanky young Kafar with golden tattoos across the bridge of his nose and a mock serious look of outrage on his face. Me? Me? What did I do? I am not the one who has missed a month's worth of check-ins. I am not the one who, when their master finally deigned to provide an update, turns out to have gone gallivanting across a hostile parking planet with no backup or extraction plan. You're not, Kenobi interrupts dryly, and the sheer sarcasm in his voice has Jango relaxing. Kenobi is comfortable with this Kafar. Vos. Comfortable enough to be a snarky little shit, even. Because unless you're hiding Master Thulm in that ship that you definitely stole, you have also gone gallivanting across a hostile planet. To save you,
Vos nearly howls. He douses his lightsaber and makes like he wants to throw himself into Kenobi's arms, but seems to realize that neither Jango, nor Miles, nor the line of Mandalorians behind them, who haven't lowered their weapons yet, would take kindly to that, and stops a few strides away, practically vibrating in place with the effort of holding himself back.
You are my best friend. Oh, you had better not let Vaunt hear you say that. And I hear you got captured by Jango Karking Fett.
Miles, as usual, gets some degree of brain power back before Jango, and interjects with a weak,
"That's really not what happened here, actually."
But both Jedi ignore him and keep shouting at each other.
"And Karking Jin? Master. Master Qui-Gon Jin. Quinlan, honestly, can't you even pretend?"
"No, I can't pretend. I can't pretend to respect that careless jackass who couldn't tell the council where you were besides somewhere in this hemisphere. So, yes, I maybe got Luminara to help plant a fake mission in this sector in the council's database. And maybe I wheedled Thulm into taking it. And maybe Garen helped me plan how to sabotage the ship so we'd get stranded here. And maybe..."
"So, I know Kenobi's spoken for and all that,"
says one of Jango's people over internal helmet comms.
"But do we think this new Jedi is single and slash or interested in being adopted? Because my Buwirs always wanted another kid, but they've also started bugging me about grandkids. And, hey, Silas, do something dumb so we can see how good he is with that Jutty cod."
"Okay," Silas says with enthusiasm.
"Silas, do not,"
Jango threatens. Vos's ramble rant has continued unabated, and he starts to retrace his steps towards his stolen ship. "So I ditched Thulm once we landed, and I put my ear to the ground, and I raided a Death Watch camp like a billion clicks from here, and..." Obi-Wan goes stiff all over when Vos reaches for a cargo compartment on the ship.
"You did what?"
"I wasn't going to show up to a hostage negotiation empty-handed," Vos says archly. He opens the compartment and hauls out a gagged, blonde, humanoid female who struggles against his grip. She looks. She... It's... It can't be. "This is Arla Fett," Vos announces proudly, and the bottom falls out of Jango's stomach. She's like 80% feral. Some of that might be an act. The Force seems pretty sure she was who she said she was, though. And she helped me wreck a lot of shit on the way out of camp, so... All the mirth and teasing drops from his face. He ignites his lightsaber again and holds it across Arla's.
"Arla. That's Arla. That's Jango's sister. He's thought she was dead since he was 11.
Chest. Vos looked Jango in the T-visor. "You give me Obi-Wan. I give you your sister. We all happily go our separate ways. That sound good to you, Mandalore?" Jango's hand flexes on his Beskar. He's raised it and his blaster again at some point in the last few seconds, thoughts tumbling over themselves in his head, requests for orders pinging in his ears. He, Arla, but this Jedi is obviously a friend of Kenobi's, but... Pressure against his Beskar. Miles's voice, pained.
"Obi-Wan."
Obi-Wan's voice, calm.
"Quinlan, stand down."
Kenobi a step forward and pressed his own throat against Jango's blade. Jango and Vos react in the same breath, both pulling their weapons away as various people shout warnings and threats and other exclamations. Horror and relief course through Jango simultaneously.
"Obi-Wan, why would you..."
"Well, Force, Obes, you could have just said that you like them," Vos says, scowling and letting Arla,
go. She immediately tries to kick him in the crotch. He dodges without looking.
"They're my soulmates," Obi-Wan drawls, motioning to Jango and Miles.
Like doesn't quite begin to do the situation justice. Vos's eyes get big, and he holds Arla off with one distracted hand. There's silence for a few seconds. Incredibly tense silence. Then Vos bursts out laughing.
"Oh, man, this is the best gift you could have ever given me. Windu's gonna totally lose his shit. Jedi Master and High Counselor of the Order, Mace Windu, Quinlan